Welcome to BrainMachineNetwork.com.
Interesting. You're saying it looks like the cocoa plant, not the cocoa bean.
No.
I'm saying it looks like the cocoa plant, which is incorrect because when I said coca, that means cocaine.
Cocaine, yeah.
Have you guys got those chocolate oranges that come as an orange?
Oh, I've
orange?
Seen those.
Like,
I've always wanted one.
On the table?
Yeah, I know. It's already pre-segmented.
That makes sense, really.
Yeah. But that was when I was a kid, that was like the most glamorous. Like mum had one of those going, you'd find where it was in the pantry and you'd go fucking hog wild.
Those in Ferrero Rocher, but it'd be very fun to eat one of those chocolate oranges the same way kids eat orange slices at like soccer games.
That'd be very fun to bring that to your child's soccer game and hand that out. Like, get some orange slices.
That and Ferrero Rocher are like the when you're dumb, you think is what fancy is. Oh, high class.
I remember I was at my friend's house once. And he just had some, like, his mom, I guess, had gotten, like, you know, the big box of Ferrero Rocher. So she just had them on the table. And he's like, yeah, just have one. I was like, are we allowed to eat
them? Right, yeah.
I thought there was, like, a thing where you had to be given them to you by an adult.
I don't want
to
put your family in debt. But there was that really funny prank where someone got, they wrapped Ferrero Rocher's with Brussels sprouts. They took the wrapper and wrapped it.
You know what? That is a funny prank. I what I'm imagining is someone thinking they're about to have a Ferrero Rocher.
And it's a Brussels sprout. Following year, they do the same thing, but now they cover the Brussels sprout in chocolate and the peanuts, the hazelnuts, and everyone's like, all right, cool. And they put it in their mouth.
It's a Brussels sprout covered in chocolate.
Very funny prank for someone on Twitter who went viral. I can't remember their name.
A two-hitter prank. You only get two uses of that prank.
And then it's gone.
Yeah. My friend... We used to work at a promotions company, and one time he got, like, you'd promote different products in supermarkets. You'd promote cheese. You'd go, do you want to try some cheese?
Oh, do like a sample kind of a display thing?
Yeah, okay. And he got Ferrero Rocher, and it just devalued the chocolate completely because you get so much stock that you are hauling around more than you could ever possibly give out. So you just gorge yourself on these luxurious chocolates until you're like, this is just regular chocolate.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't even like this
and
anymore.
And that's what it's like to be a millionaire.
It's what I think makes it fancy is all the time it takes to unfold, like unwrap one of those fucking things. Like loose in a bag, I don't think people would care.
If they were loose in a bag, I'd be like, my aunt made these.
Yeah.
That's the power of marketing, I guess.
Absolutely. I buy things all the time because of how they're packaged. I almost just bought a bottle of seawater. There's a new beverage.
I was getting so mad that you were even talking to me about it. I was like, you're wasting my time with this thing.
I always look, any new kind of beverage, I always want to know what it is. And I probably will try it because I'm obsessed with superfoods or like any kind of advantage I could give my body. So like I saw this weird.
Yeah, me too.
Sips Red Bull. In the bodega around the corner, we always get drinks before the pod. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And it's a little stout, like a little stubby bottle. And a funny name. I can't remember.
It was called Refixer.
Refixer.
Doesn't really, make sense.
It's meant to sound like Elixir, I guess.
Oh, maybe.
Okay. A good call. You know marketing. And it just said,
you worked at a promotions company.
rough seawater. And it's seawater, lemon, and like agave.
Stevia.
Stevia.
I would love to shake the hand of whoever released that product. Like, that is so brazen.
It's and some guy like dipping glass balls in the ocean. They all come in different
$4
sizes.
$4
a bottle.
For not a – for like almost the same size. You know when you get like you're somewhere and they have like the little bottles of Poland Spring water? It's like that size almost.
Those infuriate me.
It's like – I get it.
Okay.
Because it's a thing where – you ever, like, a party or, I imagine, on a set, if you're ever asked to film something.
I have been on set, and they were there.
So they're there, because I feel like people will take a full bottle of water,
and drink
take three sips, and leave it.
Fair point.
And it's very wasteful.
It's low investment, because you're like, well, this isn't a real bottle of water, so you don't build a genuine connection to the bottle. You're like, whatever, who cares?
You have no emotional, relationship with the bottle. It's just
Can I ask, if you have a drink, do you do milliliters on your drinks here, 500 mils?
I couldn't tell you.
We do, but I think they're also there, but they're secondary. See, they're, like, in parentheses next to it. So it's in ounces, and then it shows milliliters.
12 ounces there. So I'd say, I'd guess 16 ounces. If you get a 16-ounce drink or bigger, do you have that in one sitting, or do you break it up and you'll, like,
depends
have some throughout the day?
Okay. What's it packaged in? Can or bottle?
Bottle.
Oh, okay. Bottle, I can.
Yeah.
I can stretch it out, but can I gotta go?
Yeah.
You can't because you can't.
But
like,
you don't have a hard or fast rule. You just see play it by
the seat of my pants.
Yeah.
Seat of my pants.
Not the seat of my pants. The seam on the side. I'm a chugger though.
You a chug?
I'm a chugger. I usually try to get as much of a drink as fast as possible because I'm like, I like this.
Uh-huh.
So exactly. I just like, I'm like, I want as much of it as soon as possible.
That's what I'm like with hors d'oeuvres.
Oh, yeah. Don't sex shame this food.
Like whenever I'm around finger food,
you're just like, give me.
I'm always like, I can't stop myself. Like, it's,
yeah, of course.
You scrape them all into a bowl and eat them like cereal.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I'll be, you know, if you're at a function and they're giving out the nice finger food, I'm just going crazy. Mm-hmm. And like, I think everyone else is doing it. And then I eat 2/3 of a plate and I look up and I'm like, oh, well, we ran out of food.
I didn't plan accordingly.
Yeah.
I have like a new office job now and we moved into a like a new fancier space. So they had like a party to basically just to show off the new office.
Right, yeah.
And there was like way more people than you think would be. How many people do you think would come to a party
60?
Like that?
60? I don't know how big your office is, but yeah, 50, 60 people. Yeah.
There's 300 guests there.
Oh.
There was a band. Well, and a band, the word band is strong,
okay.
But there was a...
People with instruments, would you
there
say?
Was a guy with a stand-up bass, a woman with a keyboard, and a guy with a saxophone.
Okay.
There was a collection of musicians.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a jazz trio.
Who arrived individually and banded together.
At one
point. Oh, yeah.
I was just going to do it by myself.
Oh, yeah. If you follow me up, you can follow me up.
At one point, I was walking around because there was a thing where it was like I had to spend my whole week like helping put together the party. But then once the party started, I didn't have to do anything.
Oh, great.
Which was nice. So it was like they like hired people to give out the hors d'oeuvres, and like two of the guys that work at the place I work at own a restaurant together. So it was like their restaurant catered it.
Beautiful.
And yeah, and it was like there was people.
What kind of food was it?
Rustic
Italian?
Kind of. Where it was like dates wrapped in prosciutto and stuff
like
that.
Food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People love that.
Yeah, it was really good. I assume.
Yeah, right. Everyone's
what was it. What was the yummiest thing you ate?
So, because I'm vegan, so it's like there wasn't a lot to begin with.
Of course.
How were the napkins then?
The napkins were... But I also don't drink alcohol, so that was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But they did have sparkling apple cider.
Yeah.
Which was nice. But at one point, these people from like a bagel store or something came in late, and they brought like... Because the party started at... supposed to start at like 4:30, basically. Mm-hmm. And the people that were doing the delivery came in around 6 or 6:30, mm-hmm. but they dropped off like a cheese plate and then a fruit plates. So I took, but like you saying how many of the hors d'oeuvres you eat, maybe they had the fruit plate out, but the way the pineapple was cut, that it was basically a full circle, like they just sliced into the
Whoa.
Pineapple, and so the piece I took, I was worried I was gonna get fired because of how big of a piece of pineapple I had, and I was just like, I ran over to the fruit plate because I was like, finally, there was fruit, and then on the cheese plate there was like Ritz crackers, and I was like, I can eat those, and I'm gonna eat this fruit, and I'm just like, the amount everyone was looking at me, how much fruit I was taking.
People were taking note.
Yeah, they saw it.
What have you ever had? Is there an hors d'oeuvre that you've particularly enjoyed or have thought about since, in a way that you wish there was a restaurant you can stand inside of and people just walk around with hors d'oeuvres?
So are you asking for a specific hors d'oeuvre I've tasted?
Yeah, that you really enjoy.
Well, first of all, I think what you've described is a roaming tapas restaurant, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
I love the idea of that.
Yeah, it's like, you know those Brazilian steakhouses where they just like bring meat?
Oh, churrascaria.
They bring meat to your table. Like, would you like some of this?
I like any restaurant that has a button system.
Yeah. Oh, I like when they have a flag. Have you seen the flag thing?
No.
So you hold up a green flag if you want more meat, and you hold up a red flag if you're full. And
you hold up a yellow flag if you're offside.
Yeah. That's if you have to take a piss. But they come over, and they're like, so it's that, but tapas.
Tapas, that's so funny.
That is nice.
Yeah.
I just know, because I'm a vegetarian, mm-hmm. and the last thing I had it when I was chowing down on this finger food was at an event where they had little tacos. And I was like, is this, to one of the, you know, mm-hmm. catering staff, I was like, oh, is this vegetarian? And they don't know. And they're like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And I had a mouthful of it, and it was like the most delicious taco I've had in my life. And I was like, this is not, this is not like, this is meat.
This is too yummy.
Yeah, there's no planet on which they can make a vegetable taste like this.
I feel like a lot lot of times when you ask someone who's a little ignorant to it, if you say vegetarian, they just hear, is this red meat?
Yeah.
If it's not red meat, it's vegetarian.
That's my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's like, no, but he's like, chicken is poultry.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's still like an animal. He goes, but it's not steak.
We're in agreement.
I agree that chicken is not steak. We can for sure agree on that. But I will not be eating the chicken sausage that you have.
When I worked at Blossom, we did a catering event for Mayim Bialik. Is that her name? Mayim Bialik? The girl who played Blossom?
Blossom.
She released a book, and her brilliant wordplay was going to have a party at Blossom.
Oh my god.
It's a restaurant named Blossom and she's Blossom. Okay, very funny.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I got asked to be one of the caterers. So I want to be one of the servers, I guess. Because it was our restaurant, so I didn't have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And the food was really good. It wasn't stuff we normally have on the menu.
But it was still vegan?
It's still vegan.
Okay.
Because she's vegan. Yeah, she's vegan. And we had a little chicken cordon bleu sandwiches, like little tiny ones. I must have spent half of the night in the back just eating a lot of them. Because the chef at the time started doing jiu-jitsu because of me, and he really liked me. And he's like, could
you take me? These little sandwiches.
And look, Mayim Bialik might have gotten a little drunk and hit on me. Who's going to say?
Is that true?
Yeah.
You got hit on my Blossom?
Yeah, I did.
That's cool.
It was pretty sick, actually.
Did I ever tell you the reason I got slapped in the face because of Blossom?
No.
All right. So
you didn't tell me either.
I didn't tell you either. But the thing is, it's not that I wouldn't want to tell you. It's just I'm sure I haven't told you this story.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure I haven't told Diego this.
Well,
either way, I'm definitely going to tell it.
Yeah, yeah. It does feel like an anecdote that's going to get told.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? What if you just waited till the next episode?
If I was like, hey, have I told you about the time where I got slapped in the face because of Blossom? And then he goes, yeah. And I go, all right.
Pretty cool, man.
And that's the whole thing. But so I was at a I lived in Albany for a couple of years, and
let me clarify real quick, just so no one gets flirting. I wouldn't say hit on. She didn't ask me to come over. It was just a little flirtatious. That's all.
I feel like
she's
that's
married.
What people,
I don't want to be.
That's
like,
not that's the mental picture I had at all.
In my head, she was at a hold of your entire genitalia, and she goes, "Listen, I'm not vegan, but I know about meat." And she's like looking in your eyes, and she's like, and you're like, "Wow!" And her eyes turn into spirals. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole thing.
I'm with you, Mike. I think the way the story was told, it was dripping in innuendo.
I apologize.
And
then
sort of sexual pathos. To hear that it was just an incidental compliment,
yeah.
I feel ripped off.
I'm sorry, guys.
Did she at any time squeeze to see how taut your biceps are?
She actually did not.
What?
Which is a move women do.
Oh, yeah, they do it all the time. Mm-hmm. And as soon as a woman touches my arm, I go,
get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, same.
Continue the Blossom story.
Okay, man, this story sucks. but so I was at this party, and my friends and I would all go to these college parties just because, you know, whatever. We were college aged.
Yeah. They weren't checking student IDs.
Yeah. And they were in houses. They weren't like, you have to be enrolled in the college to go to the party. But
if someone at the party said, "What are you studying?" What did you say?
Oh yeah.
I'd go. But so we're all comedians here, and but this is before I was a comedian. But I was like, you know what, the funniest thing in the world is at a party, putting a lampshade on your head. I couldn't stop wanting to put this lampshade on my head.
It's a good bit. That's a solid bit.
I thought it was funny.
Because you're not a lamp.
Because I'm not a lamp.
Even though I do love you.
No. I know I'm not lamp. Yeah. I know that. But I thought it was funny, especially because I was sober. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's funny to be a sober guy with the lampshade in your head. because historically,
party
it's a drunk man.
Yeah, historically. That if we look at the history books.
Yeah, that does elevate the comedy.
Yeah, see?
A lot.
See? So this story does not suck. So I keep doing it. And this one woman in particular, the whole night, is very mad at me for it.
Can I just ask, would you say anything? Would you say, hey, look, it looks like I'm a lamp, but it's just me, it's Mike.
No,
yeah,
see,
did you do that?
See, the comedy there was a little more nuanced.
It was nuanced.
I
knew that about it.
Put it on my head, and I would just sit. kind of like a lamp would.
Like a lamp would.
Like
a
lamp
would.
Very stationary. I'd just sit there. And if someone would say, hi, Mike, I'd be like,
mm-hmm.
Point at the shade.
You just point the shade. You got to pull the little chain to make it talk.
Yeah.
Did you put a chain in your mouth?
I would have loved to have had a chain on.
Man,
hand.
I'm so sorry. That would have been great.
No, it's fine. It's
it
just
feels like such an alpha move to me in sobriety to be doing to be very subtly doing this lamp. I mean, as subtle as a lampshade on a head can be,
but to just put.
But
it
it's
on.
Not loud.
Yeah,
vocally.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. You're not calling attention to
yourself. No, I was just hanging out, you know, dancing to music or talking to people, drinking a little drink. And this woman kept getting so mad at me for it.
Was it her place?
No, it was my friend's house.
Oh, then get the fuck out of here. She has no right to get mad.
No. So she kept taking it off my head.
Okay.
But then, through different movements and, you know, espionage and whatnot, I'd get the shade back. I'd get it back on my head. Mm-hmm. 2, 3, 4 times I had the shade on my head.
Get the fuck out of here.
2, 3, 4 times I had the shade on my head. It kept. Uh-huh. And then finally, also, I must say that this woman was wearing quite a tiny backpack.
Oh, one of those.
One of those 90s little tiny backpacks.
Little tiny JanSport.
A la
Blossom.
Blossom.
Wow. Or Joe. Was it her name, Joey? What was her neighbor's name? Her best friend's name? No, Joey was the
brother.
The brother.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a really bad.
Anyway, sorry. Continue.
Anyway,
continue.
So, three, four, five, 10 times I have this have this shade on my head.
Yeah.
And then eventually she pulls it off my head, but aggressively. Mm-hmm. And I go, "All right, Blossom, stop fucking touching me."
Nice, nice.
And then she immediately slapped me in the face.
So that seems a little out of bounds. That's not cool.
Well, yeah, of course. And that's the problem. Sorry, this is a men's rights activist podcast. This is the problem with women. They don't know boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to not have that part public.
That will be the soundbite we put on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good soundbite. I'd like to distance myself.
Anyway, this is our guest today, Guy Montgomery.
Guy.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Comedian, podcast host.
And New Zealander.
Yeah.
Tallest.
I was just going to say Guy.
Guy. Guy's a guy?
Yeah. He's just here.
Yeah. No, it's nice, I think, because a lot of people might have thought, where's he from?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now.
They had a vague idea, probably.
They don't have to wonder about that anymore.
No.
It's settled. They can relax into the podcast.
The cat's out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
My most closely guarded secret.
I want to be one of those guys that interviews people just like, New Zealand, what's that like?
Yeah.
What?
And just wait for 45
minutes. And I just look at you.
That's one of my favorite questions as asked by Americans.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What's that like?
I go, New Zealand. I've always wanted to go to New Zealand.
They're like, have you?
Really?
Yeah, I think just they meet in New Zealand and they're reminded it exists.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, like, you have a vague sort of soft focus idea of what it is, you know, in your periphery. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, yeah.
Green.
You know Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
You know Flight of the Conchords. And
yes.
We know, are the All Blacks?
Yes.
Is that from there?
And this, yeah, that's the way the conversation goes. They go, three facts. They go, oh, you're from New Zealand. So are these three things.
Now, you are already very obviously apparent of, you know what's up with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I tell you what. Because every time I hear it, and I go, wow, I got to look this up. These sound so great. Lord of the Rings.
That's great.
And then I forget. And I'm always like, oh, I'll never remember the name of the thing. But then I just got to go out and talk to another American. And lo and behold.
There's a lot of them here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called a haka.
Yes, that's the war dance, the challenge being laid down at the start of the rugby.
Mm-hmm. That's how I open all my sets. I do a whole haka.
Yeah,
I've
seen that.
You do a whole haka. Yeah. It's like about 8 minutes long,
yep.
And then you're like, so,
get the light,
so I'm single.
Dating is weird.
I have some observations on dating in New York City. And then you do a haka to close.
Mm-hmm.
Haka
to
close. Oh, wow.
It's bookended
yeah,
with hakas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a set.
Yeah.
He really runs the light.
Uh-huh.
But you can't stop a haka.
You can't. That's rude. That's cultural appropriation.
I know. The performance of the haka is the cultural appropriation.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to get booked at the Melbourne Comedy Festival or wherever the fuck it is.
They don't care in Melbourne. That's in Australia.
That's
yeah.
Funny.
They don't disrespect us, but Australians don't care about New Zealanders.
They don't care?
Well, not that they don't care, but they think of New Zealand like Americans think of Canada. They're like, oh, it's cute.
Oh, okay.
They're like, oh, it's that little place over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that little spot over there.
Interesting.
Even though the landmass of Canada is not actually little at all.
No,
if you think about
it's quite large.
It's quite big. It's
huge, vast, massive expanses of nothing.
Exactly. There's not a lot going on, though.
Low population density.
Oh, man.
High space.
High space.
High ceiling. To success in Canada.
Oh, look at that.
Hmm?
Oh, that's great. We're a pro-Canada podcast.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So,
Canada, our home and native land.
True patriot love. Is that it? Of all us, something come on. It's not a bad melody.
Yeah.
It's not terrible. As far as national anthems go,
New Zealand's got a real shitter.
Really? Oh, yeah. Can
you give us a little bit? We've got a bad melody, and we've got bad lyrics.
Give us a melody. Hum it.
It goes, how does it go? Am I from New Zealand?
No, yeah.
Let me look it up.
I mean, that's what you say.
No, I can't.
This is how your whole.
I genuinely can't remember the melody of the New Zealand national anthem right now. Oh, no, that's God Save Our Queen.
God, you just start singing Sex Pistols. God Save Our Queen. Oh, it's like a flute.
This is like the ambient version.
Oh,
yeah,
this is the pure
moods. I like it. That's the pure moods version of.
It's 7 minutes long? That's a fucking ad.
Right, I'm glad that we figured this out quickly.
Yeah, people come to the podcast for many different reasons. God Defend New Zealand. That's the name of it. That's a pretty cool name.
Is that what it's called?
Uh-huh.
I guess that's.
Whoa.
This doesn't sound right.
This sounds too funky.
This is the keyboard version.
Yeah, yeah.
We put
I apologize.
Trumpet on the keyboard.
But, yeah. There's a lot of
them. That was the Tadeo version, which is superior to the English version.
Oh. I like that.
Tadeo is like the indigenous language of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one is God Defend New Zealand. Like that.
Okay.
This is a good conversation, I think.
I think so.
I think it's great.
I think so far, so good.
Yeah.
A lot of anthems are obsessed with God and defending.
And the queen.
And the queen. And pride. I think pride's in there somewhere.
You got to have... There's no pride in there.
There's no pride in there.
America's got a very prideful anthem.
That's true.
We're cocky people.
Very prideful people.
I wish we were a little bit more cockney. I think that'd be fun. Do a little bit more rhyming slang.
Mm-hmm. All right, mate. We got
Try again.
No, I don't want to.
Can you try again,
You've accent shamed me.
No, I like that. It's quite nerve wracking when you try an accent that you're not comfortable doing.
Sure.
It took me so long to figure out how to do an Australian accent. I'm still not good at it, but I figured it out.
What's the trick? What would you say is the trick?
So it's way more nasal than you think it is. It's up higher in your palate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I was trying to do it in my American chest voice, because American is always about like hey. And then an Australian one is, I got it from watching our favorite Australian content, Waiting for a Mate, which is we got him.
Yeah, that's good.
Waiting for a mate. It's up there.
Yeah, you almost have to like pull your nostrils
when it's up. It's up higher, almost in a falsetto.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You've been drinking? No, just waiting for a mate.
Just waiting for a mate.
If you haven't seen Waiting for a Mate, please YouTube that.
It's an unbelievable video of a guy in a fully crashed car, and a police officer is like, how did this accident happen?
Calmly.
And he goes, what accident? It's my favorite part, and he goes, I'm just waiting for a mate. And he goes, what's your mate's name? And he goes, Steve. And then like 3 minutes later, he's like, what's your name? And he goes, Steve. Just has the same name as his mate.
That is an all-time vid.
The
American accent's fun because it's easy. I think it's easier for most people to do because it's been beamed out into the world so frequently.
Good point.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to do regional American accents, but like, you know, pan sort of America.
Yeah, non-regional dialect, like a newscaster would have.
Right.
As opposed, hey, how are you?
Hey, guys.
That's good. Yeah,
that's really good.
That's really fun, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It almost seems like you enunciate just everything and kind of bring it down a little bit.
I'm sorry.
Hey, you guys are adorable.
We're obsessed with those I think they're GQ or I don't know who it does.
No,
it
was Wired?
Wired, the accent videos of the dialect coach. Yeah.
Oh, wow, I haven't seen those.
It's really good. It's like for movies and TV shows usually.
It's a dialect coach like breaking down
what?
If someone's accent is good or bad and why.
Oh, that's quite fun. Do they rattle through like things where various different examples of someone doing an accent? Like,
yeah.
So if they do a South African accent, they'll pull examples of Leonardo DiCaprio in Blood Diamond or Matt Damon in Invictus.
Literally yes. those two.
In a video, and they'll be like, this
and
is
literally
good.
This
two.
Is why, yeah, this is a very, it'll be like, this is a very, like, tiny little detail that they nailed right.
Yeah.
And then, and it's always a thing where it's like, the guy will point out, if someone does a really good accent and they do, like, one thing incorrectly, he goes, yeah, what are you going to do?
It's hard. He's like, this is very hard.
It's very hard to do. What are you going to... It's like a different way of speaking. And then, yeah. But if someone is really bad, he's still pretty fair.
Yeah, he'll be like, they probably just didn't have enough time to prepare. Okay. Or they got asked to do this role late notice.
But he's not afraid
to say that it's
to
bad.
Slam people.
Yeah. No, I think
no. He's just very conscious of how difficult it is.
Yeah,
but yeah, they're just.
But like he shits on what was it, Kevin Costner's Robin Hood accent, where like he goes in and out of the British accent throughout the entire movie, and it's very.
That is funny because that's what happens in you know, like people who don't. Aren't actors, like I've done improv before, if you choose to do an accent in a scene, you just keep coming in and out, but it's like that doesn't matter because it's just happening once live. If you're shooting a whole movie about a very popular figure, you'd think someone would be like, Kevin, you're doing the American bit again.
Hey, this sucks.
Well, especially when the
all right, give me all your money, mate.
But especially when the role is a very famous person who has a very specific way of speaking, where they did the, what was JFK's, Jackie Onassis?
The Natalie Portman one.
The Natalie Portman, she crushes it. And it's like, people were like, the average person watched that movie and thought she did a bad job, but don't remember how Jackie O actually sounded. Mm. And she just did it exactly how Jackie O spoke.
How did Jackie O speak?
She had a very weird accent.
Yeah.
And she would have her, apparently, this is the guy talking, her breathing patterns would be a little interesting. Like, she would inhale on the second syllable of the third word. Like, very specific. Yeah. And it's like, they took side by side the actual interview of Jackie Onassis showing off the White House, like a room in the White House, and then the part of the movie where Natalie Portman
and
plays it.
She smash it.
She does a great job. And he goes, she even has, like, he has a bunch of technical terms, and he goes, she does a blah, 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 whatever the tone is. In this
sentence,
loves
talking about plosion.
Plosion, how people hold their mouth. I can't remember what the term was. But it's like, it's so interesting. I've watched them like a ton.
That's so cool. Like, because Natalie Portman's obviously a very good actor, but to be able to, like, just... Before you can even do it as second nature when you're performing, to be able to train yourself where all you're thinking about is how to master speaking in that way is so hard.
Yeah.
And then to do that and be like, and now that's like, I guess that's why she gets millions and millions of dollars and told to act in movies like that.
It's a thing where you're like, all right, I have to learn how to speak like this person, and then I have to learn all of the dialogue for an entire movie.
Yeah, and then I have to make it feel natural and genuine. Like, that's so many layers.
So we watched...
like that.
No, fuck you. We were watching Saturday Night Live this morning, and I missed you watching this week's one.
Is this a topical podcast? Like, is this
no.
Does this go out at roughly the same time in pop culture as the events we discuss?
I guess this one
is a couple days behind this week.
Yeah,
but this we watched the one from a couple weeks ago, the Jason Momoa episode, and there was a part where. In the monologue where it was like Leslie Jones, Keenan, and Chris Redd come out, and he just has to like talk to them in the conversation. But it's a sketch basically, and he has lines. And I'm like, this guy is like a famous actor, and it sounds like he's reading off of his hand.
Yeah,
like
it's a different skill.
Yeah,
it's like I think you can tell when an actor. And again, I'm not expecting everyone to be stand-up comedians when they do a monologue, but it's like you can tell what actors have theater background and who have only worked in front of a camera. Where it's like it is a certain level of vulnerability and a comfort within that realm to
like
be able to just
people,
and just be able to just let it come out of you naturally. But it was a little awkward in her.
It was very we talked about that he is so handsome that he's never had to be interesting.
Yeah.
So he's just been a good-looking man his entire life.
You want people to become beautiful after high school.
Yeah.
Or even in their early to mid-20s. And then they've had to develop a very riveting personality also.
Now you're a full person, finally. Yeah.
That's called the human jackpot.
That's human jackpot.
Do you guys ever feel, in the way that you could see in Jason Momoa, where he was sort of nervy or anxious when he was talking... Do you ever have that experience yourselves now in public speaking situations? Not just in comedy, but is there anything that stirs anxiety where you're like, oh.
Oh. Like not on stage, just being a person.
No. I mean, well, yeah, it could be anything.
Okay.
I was at work a couple weeks ago. It was when I was still like pretty new. And I was like, so I originally got hired at this job basically just to help them move from their old office to their new office. Mm-hmm. But there was like a meeting that I had to be in. And they were talking about the move. And I was like... I just had to say something to the group of all of these people who work in this very nice office. But it's a thing where it's like, I very much, I'm like, I shouldn't be funny right now.
Yeah.
I should just be the guy who's here to help you move.
But that's always been the guiding light for you speaking in your whole life has always been move towards funny.
But I just had to be like, and also I have some boxes in the office if anyone needs them for personal items.
Do you feel like you're wasting, like, because it happens occasionally, not when I'm at work, but like when I'm in person, and it's like or out and about, where like the goal isn't to make anyone laugh. And you're like, why am I even talking? You know, like it's like just to get a point across. It just feels like a waste.
I was just telling people about like where to get like old copy paper boxes so they could put their personal items. And I was like, man. I like looked down at my phone recording. I'm like, no laughs. The laughs per minute on this are very low.
It doesn't happen to me anymore, but since I've been teaching for a while, whenever my instructor, who's also my boss, would come in during one of my classes I was teaching, I felt myself get very anxious and like self-conscious because like it's my instructor. He was like just staring at me. He's like doing stuff in the room or like moving something around or something.
Yeah, he's at his place of business.
It's his fucking business. Yeah. But like... I felt myself get nervous about what I was going to say. And, like, I always to my students.
Yeah, it's because,
because he's my instructor. He knows more than I do, obviously. And he's given me most of the knowledge that I have. So to repeat that to other people, I could feel myself thinking, oh, does he think I'm saying it wrong? Does he think I'm...
ripping like him off exactly?
Not even ripping him off, but just, like, am I missing a detail that he finds very important? Am I kind of focusing on the wrong aspect of the technique? But now... I've been doing it for a decent amount of time now. Whenever he's in the room, I'm more excited to show him how I teach and like how, because we're very different instructors.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, like he's a little more stern and old fashioned. I'm not necessarily silly, but I'm a little more lighthearted.
But you're finding your voice as an instructor. I'm finding my voice. And you're happy to show it off to him.
And I am, yeah. And it's funny because like students will find out I also do stand up and they're confused because I'm not funny necessarily with like newer people.
Yeah.
I'm only funny with like my advanced students. I've been there for like 5-6 years.
Yeah.
On Friday, everyone at my job found out I was a comedian somehow.
Oh, Jesus.
Like 4 people asked me about it. And I was like, fuck no.
What did they say?
So I had to move.
Like crashing, huh? Pretty good.
Hey, pretty good. It's like that's what it's like, right? And I go, yeah.
Just go hang out the cellar.
Yeah. But so I was just like doing my job. Like I was helping like one of the guys at my job. I'm trying not to say what people's titles and things are, but he wanted I guess his office is directly above like the air conditioning duct for the building.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I want to not be here anymore. I want to go to one of the other offices. So I'm like in his office, like picking up a lamp to move it. And two of the other guys walk by and go, you're the comedian, right? And
oh,
I go,
Jesus.
Yeah. And they go, so if we had like a gig for you, would you like want to do it? And I go, possibly, because I didn't know, because it's like, they're my bosses, and I don't know, and they're just like, and one of the guys laughs and goes, possibly? And they're like, oh, we're members of this, like, arts, something, and he's like, we might have a gig if you would want to do it, and I go, like,
can I open for you?
They already were like, I don't know if we could pay you.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And he's like, well, we could buy you some drinks. And I was like, great.
Why don't you give me the money you're going to use to buy drinks?
Yeah.
How about that?
How about you just give me $25?
Yeah. I'm not asking for a lot.
I would love to.
Oh,
I would love to
I'm
ask
gonna
for a lot.
Soon.
Yeah. But just that and just being like, okay, well, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, I'm working.
Yeah.
And then I was walking by one of the assistant's desks. And she goes like, you're a comedian? And
oh,
I go
Jesus.
Like, yeah, but like her and I have like
a rapport.
Like yeah. Like she's young, and it's like we, you know, we talk to each other like people. I'm not just like hello and hi.
I'm so sorry.
Sometimes I told you this. Sometimes when I go bring someone mail, I won't look them in the eye.
Sure,
because I feel like they are so above me.
Oh, they are.
Wow. They are. But like
no,
but not.
Yeah.
But well, I like it's a thing where it's like I'm not like a peasant. I mean, I am, but. Man, everything, I'm like, I'm not this. I'm like, well, I kind of am.
I guess you have gone to pains to not say what these people who...
I think I've said it before. I work in a law office.
So you're going to give mail to lawyers?
Yeah.
And you don't want to look them in the eye?
No.
That is insane.
I mean, I guess. It's just the thing where it's like...
Who cares? They're lawyers. So fucking what?
Yeah. The thing is...
These are
educated people.
You need to respect
that. But I catch myself
doing
it, and I'm like, stop doing that. Like, I know that I shouldn't be doing it, but it's just... programmed into my head, because I've like, this is like the first office job I've had ever in my life. So I've never had that, like, almost like the disparity of wealth in the people working at a place. At least that's like so open.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a thing where it's like, I, you know, I like have to deal with people's mail, and I have to make copies for people and print out stuff. So it's like, I can see how much you're charging people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So I know how much you're making.
I say, if you want to fix it, and I do this with my students. And
challenge them to a fight.
No, just go hard in the opposite direction, and it'll bring you back to neutral. So next time you go drop off someone's mail, don't knock, walk in, go, hey, and throw it on the floor, and then when they go to reach for it, you spit on it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to go well.
You only need to do it 4 or 7 times.
I'm just about to get health insurance, and I really need it.
Well, yeah, you're in a bind then, because Diego's technique is, it's the only way to,
the only way to go.
Back
to
level footing, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. But I think, I like when, like, because it's mostly older guys there,
mm-hmm.
because it's a law firm. That's just how law firms go, mm-hmm. usually.
Well.
I'm not in charge of hiring. Imagine I was in charge of hiring.
Not a lot of diversity.
There are women there, but most of them are younger.
Mm-hmm.
And we make them sit outside. No, but so it's oh fuck. Where was I going?
I don't know. I think we got it.
You're saying older guys.
I like when the facade breaks a little bit.
Sure.
Of that, like there's a guy there who is, I would say, roughly 300 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's the oldest man I've ever seen. And half the time when he talks, it's not – he's like, hey, and you're just like – all of a sudden, but then when he's like talking about a case or something, he's like – and you're just like, what? Okay. So it's like he's been so supremely focused on one thing for years. But he was talking – we had – so because we just moved, we had people come in and hang the paintings up.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking. He's like, yeah, they're like trying to figure out who should – like which company they should use, blah, blah, blah. And he goes – I think it's just like, I'd rather have nothing on the wall than a bunch of pieces of shit hanging up. And I was just like, yeah.
All right. That's pretty cool.
Cool.
Old man.
This is fun. We can curse here? And they're like, not really. A guy definitely saw me just saying fuck, like, out loud to myself in my little space recently.
Of course you did.
Because I was like, something broke. And I was like, I got to go fix this fucking thing. And he walks in and we make eye contact as soon as I'm like, fuck. And I'm just like, eh, well, what are you going to do? I'm an adult man.
Yeah, you're an adult man.
Thank you.
Can, I tell you what, you've got license when you're around me. You can swear whenever you want.
Whoa. Dude, how's swearing culture in New Zealand?
People swear.
I feel like children swear in New Zealand.
No, not necessarily. No more or less than children swear here.
Okay.
But, yeah, people like to punctuate. Uh-huh. I think it's similar. You know, people like to punctuate things when they're trying to be funny by swearing
okay.
in the same way people do here. I love it when used appropriately.
Sure. I think when you're going through it, you're like your teenage years, you're trying to figure out what is appropriate.
Yeah.
You kind of overdo it.
I remember experimenting with like my first use of the word fuck in front of my parents.
Whoa.
When I would have been like 17 or maybe even younger.
That's old enough.
Yeah. But I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, you know, in my head, I was like, I'm going to say fuck in front of my parents.
Oh,
you know?
That's
like,
exciting.
Oh, fuck. Oh, this is fucking great. Well, what, you know,
oh, smart. You went positive.
Yeah, yeah, or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. I fucking love church.
And they didn't bet an eyelid. They didn't, you know. I was like, oh, great. So that's the new term. I can say fuck now.
Pull out a pack of cigarettes.
I think I really used my parents' divorce as like leeway to be able to curse.
Oh, yeah.
In
I'm
the
sure
house.
You get leeway that way.
Because I'm like, everyone's always fucking yelling. And then everyone's like, okay, right. We're fine. And I'm just like, yeah, no, you didn't even say anything about cursing. You just told me to calm down.
That's pretty good.
So now I use rage as everything.
Do you guys call, like how we call it like sixth grade, but Canada calls it grade six? What do you guys call it?
How old are you?
How old am I right now?
No, in
sixth grade?
Grade.
Oh,
12 years old.
13, yeah.
We'd call that probably year 9.
Whoa. Wait, what is the end of not?
That's the 9th year that you're at school.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting concept.
When does it end?
Year 13.
Year 13. Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. So it goes J1, J2, J3.
What's the J stand for?
Join in. I don't know.
Jump in, bud.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's changed
since I was at school. Because then it would be like, yeah, then suddenly you go year 4, year 5, year 6, year 7, year 8. But when you get into year 7 and 8, it would be called Standard 1 and Standard 2. And then, like, when you get into high school, it's called Third Form. And it's all over the, you know.
Third Form?
Because we like, so, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So much of what we get is, like, in here, you know, like, we pick parts of culture from Britain because we're part of the Commonwealth, and then from you guys because it's everywhere. And you wind up with this, like, hodgepodge of, you know, and you, like, there are New Zealand colloquialisms and stuff, but it's all sort of bastardized from other bits of language, I think.
Yeah. Do you guys have, like, a, because I'm always fascinated with, like, folk heroes of places. Is there, like, a New Zealand folk hero that you guys, like, and the idea of, like, Johnny Appleseed or Paul Bunyan kind of
thing. Daniel Boone.
Daniel Boone, yeah.
Who are those three guys?
They're folk heroes in American
culture. Johnny Appleseed
culture.
Is a guy who walked across America throwing apple seeds out so apple trees would grow. Paul Bunyan was a giant, this is, like, a real tall tale, but he was, like, a giant lumberjack who had an equally giant blue ox who helped him fell the trees. And then Daniel Boone was, I think, was just, like, a...
like an old Western guy. Right?
What?
Was he like a Western guy?
He was like a an explorer. Explorer, almost, that's what he was like, kind of figuring out the lay of the land out west.
But all of these are real. They're real people, and their achievements were like, they're within the bounds of reality.
I don't think Paul Bunyan was real.
No, I think Paul Bunyan was a tall tale. Daniel Boone was real, I think so, and Johnny Appleseed was at least based on a real guy.
But yeah, exactly. His last name was not Appleseed, and like he was like, oh, look at that. Yeah. Look at throwing Appleseed. Yeah.
Or we can throw in John Henry.
I don't know John Henry.
John Henry was, he was like, it was like, it was basically the tale was man versus machine, where it was like,
oh,
the first,
he
like,
beat the with a hammer and he beat the locomotive.
Yeah.
I'm punishingly ill-informed
I don't know. I'm from here and I vaguely remember.
But yeah, there's some legendary Maori myths, which are like about the founding and how the islands took their shape and the founding of New Zealand, and then in like the 1840s, well, then the colonizers came over, and there's like civil rights figures and like, you know, heroes of movements, but there's less. We're a young country. Sure. There's less like folk. I mean, not that I can remember folk tales of people who are like.
I mean, even like there's like my girlfriend is Australian, and she told me.
Do you know her?
Yeah.
Cool.
Did she tell you about Ned Kelly?
Is that the prime minister who floated out into the ocean?
Oh no! But yeah, that's wild.
Ned Kelly's much older.
Yeah, Ned Kelly's, but he's like a bush ranger who's like a folk figure in Australia.
Yeah, I've heard the name though.
What's the space had a movie about? Where the guy who played Joker, who killed
Heath Ledger.
He was Ned Kelly in the film, right?
He played Ned Kelly, yeah. And he was like, you know, he's got some sort of, he's revered in like a heroic way, but he was just a thug who was running around the bush.
I mean, that's what most, when you actually look back at history, you're like, we look at this guy's great, Christopher Columbus, piece of shit.
But that Australian prime minister, I can't remember, I think it was in the 70s.
Yeah.
He was like in office still and went to this like remote outpost of a beach and just like, it's not known exactly whether or not he was planning to kill himself or just got washed away, but like walked out and never came back.
Insane.
That is great, like a sitting, you know,
just
leader.
Like floated,
is he come
just
back?
Floated away.
Crazy.
And the country's like, well, I guess we got to get a new guy.
Yeah, do we have a vote?
Let's elect someone who is much harder to float,
A more buoyant or less?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question is, do you go for a more confident swimmer or a less confident swimmer? Because a more confident swimmer, there's still a likelihood that they're going to muck around in the waves and get caught in a rip.
They love to muck.
A less confident swimmer. You know, they're inland. They're never going to go near the coast.
They might splash in the ankle. We're talking ankle deep water.
Ankle deep. They're not even going knee deep.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Knee deep is where the sharks are.
Is that true?
Yeah, most sharks. Oh, that's a stupid thing to say because, like, most sharks. I mean, those people are there, but, like, apparently the most shark attacks happen in
shallow water.
Hip to, knee. But, like, that's what most people are.
Sharks are so cool. They're so big and scary.
Yeah, dude.
And it's their house. So
it's totally their house.
What are you going to do?
And
if you think about it, sharks are the original proponents of the stand your ground law.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, if you talk to a shark, they'll be sure to tell you as much.
No, it's just that it's their property, and they have every right to defend it in any way possible.
It's crazy how often I hear about how dangerous the animals in Australia are, Does New Zealand have that? It seems like they're much calmer for some reason.
Famously, our lineup of native animals, we just roll over. Like, it's a miracle we have any remaining. Because there were no natural predators in New Zealand until, like, the British brought over, like, stoats and, like, vermin that would, like, run riot. Because there's a lot, and, like, a lot of our native birds, because there were no threats, are flightless.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were just like, they're absolutely there to be ravaged because they're just like, wow, my main defense mechanism's gone because I've never had to use it.
Right.
Yeah. So they're just, yeah. Like a lot of our, we've got, our national bird is a kiwi. That's why we're called kiwis.
Oh, that's why.
Which is a small, nocturnal, flightless bird that is blind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is what represents my country.
And we work so hard to keep it alive.
I bet.
why are countries national birds always in danger?
Yeah. That never seen.
And by that I mean New Zealand and America.
Yeah.
The two that I know.
Each kiwi has its own armed guard.
Like I haven't said, you know, you go to a zoo or like a sanctuary and you're like, I can't wait to see the kiwi, but they're so terrified and shy. You never get
they're
to see
like out.
Yeah.
How big are they?
They're like, how big is this?
That's like a duck size, I would say.
Yeah, but their body type's different from a duck. You won't see it like resting on its feet like a duck, you know, where a duck's whole body's flat on the ground.
Is it like a penguin then?
A little
more upright?
Between a penguin and a duck. It's like, it's sort of round.
I'm in love with this thing.
Its body's round, like a ball, kind of. And then it's got a little neck and its head and a very long beak, which it uses for sniffing out grubs and whatnot.
I think it's so funny that it's blind and nocturnal.
Yeah, I know. It's such a...
what's it meant?
Well, yeah, what difference does it make?
What do you care? It's like your vision is
How
better
How do you
at
know it's night?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my question to you,
it's
the
a
kiwi.
Little bit cooler?
Nah, the kiwi knows.
Oh, duh, it's probably what the logo is for kiwi shoe polish stuff. Yeah, that's what it looks like.
How is my description? Is it about
it's
right?
It's really good.
Let me see.
You could have said this is fucking stupid looking. You could have maybe mentioned it's a little bit furrier than I would have
guessed. True.
It kind of looks like a hedgehog.
What the fuck is that?
It looks like an anteater hedgehog.
It's a kiwi.
Yeah, man. That doesn't look anything.
It's
if
so
you told
cute.
Me, if you were like, hey, this is not a bird, I'd be like, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I believe you.
This actually
like
lives
bird.
Between couches.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it barely qualifies as a bird.
Yeah, it's almost not an animal. It's almost a rock.
I haven't seen that before.
Someone did a Photoshop photo of a kiwi the bird sliced up, and its insides are actually kiwi the fruit.
Now, that's fun.
It's because it's the same word.
Oh, and, like, we love fun. I tell you what, I think we three lads, we love to laugh.
We love to laugh.
I would say... Where's the top three laughers I've ever met?
Yeah, man.
1, 2, 3.
I feel like you're using, what's the word? Hyperbole.
Hyperbole. I got shouted out on
I don't even know what that means.
Twitter recently for just being a good laugher at a show.
Oh, that's nice.
That felt good. Someone recorded their set and like it's nice to hear Diego's laugh, but it's like a little annoying to me because I don't want to be that Hedberg joke, the distinctive laugh. He's like, oh, distinctive laugh. Doesn't think that joke is very funny. But like,
so
I just
now
have
you know how I feel about your jokes. Yeah.
I have a very distinctive laugh. But whatever. Can we just end on, because you have a podcast.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Tell us about your podcast.
Yeah, sure.
I know we don't do questions and you hate questions, but I'm just...
I hate questions.
I think it's cool. I think you have a cool podcast and you should tell me
about it. I think your podcast is cool and interesting. Just the way that he asked it made me want to fucking punch through the wall.
Well, that's the thing. No, I think our skill set as a duo is you do whatever the fuck you're doing, and I kind of help guide the podcast along.
Okay, but what I do, people like.
That's on the fence.
Honestly, super good point.
So, well, I just sort of have had this sudden and overwhelming natural urge to talk about the podcast co-host.
Oh, please indulge.
It's called The Worst Idea of All Time, and it's with a friend and fellow New Zealand comic, a guy called Tim Batt.
Uh-huh.
And The Worst Idea of All Time is a podcast wherein we watch and review the same movie every week for a year. Mm-hmm. So it's a movie review podcast in which the movie doesn't change.
Mm-hmm. In the year.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's we've did it with Grown Ups 2, first of all. So we watched that
and you
52
started with
times.
Grown Ups 2 is so
yeah,
funny.
Yeah. Yeah, we kind of backed into, like, the perfect movie for... and then we did Sex and the City 2.
Uh-huh.
And that was because we thought it was funny. It was 2.5 hours long. But that was, like, emotionally ruinous. Like, that is, I haven't listened back to it, and I don't know that I will, but that has probably captured, like, the lowest ebbs of my, you know. Like, we did, at one point, we do a director's commentary every year.
Okay.
Where we talk over it. And for that one, to up the stakes, we did a back-to-back director's commentary. So that's 5 hours of talking over Sex and the City 2.
Oh, you did, like, the same movie twice?
Yeah. And
if,
like,
you said back-to-back, I thought you'd be like, oh, well, you did Sex and the City 1.
Uh-huh. No,
and
no, that's yeah.
No, no,
nope,
no.
Just the same movie
so,
twice.
So, yeah, and that's that episode fun. Is called 5 Hour Energy. And it's, like, it's 5 hours.
Oh, my God.
And I would be curious to listen back to it, but, you know, like, if you're trying to do anything for 5 hours, like, it's, there's no way you can keep a handle on the focus of what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Especially if it's just you and your friend going insane.
Yeah.
So that certainly captured us at our worst.
I feel like that episode needs to be put in a museum. Like, just that idea, that conceptually,
yeah,
as an art piece, I think it's so high, it's so high concept.
I don't think people were listening to it for, like, comic or insight, you know, value. It's more like it's a curiosity. And if you're a completionist of listening to the podcast, it's like, well, you know, it might be hard work for hours 3 through 5,
yeah,
but you have to know what's happening at that point.
I mean, the idea of, like, you remember when you go to record stores and they have a sample CD and you put the headphones on, you get to listen to whatever album is there. I feel like your podcast should be in a gallery and you get to walk up to one and you put a headphones in and you're holding a glass of Chardonnay and you kind of nod your head like an asshole and you move along.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's the, I
you
think
just
it's,
dip in at whatever point.
Yeah, 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 you just dip in. I just think it's a very... conceptually, artistically, I think I'm very impressed, and I'm never going to listen to it. No, I might listen to it. But it's like, it's so interesting.
So then we did a third season, which was purportedly our final season of We Are Your Friends, which is the movie where Zac Efron tries to be a DJ in LA.
I've never even heard
and,
of this one.
Yeah, that was a misstep because it was a smaller indie film. Max Joseph from Catfish. It was his directorial debut.
Oh,
I think he might have written it as well. And it was just bad. Like, it was an earnest attempt at making a film that fell flat. Whereas the first two movies were sort of cynical,
yeah,
you know, like cash grabs, cashing in on a franchise. And so it was much more challenging because everything's smaller, the budget's smaller, the scenes are smaller. It's harder to pick apart over like a year. And we did that 60 times.
Wow.
And then we took a year off, and recently we've revived it. We're doing the first Sex and the City movie.
I feel like people are going to think you're like big Sex and the City fans, but
I'm not familiar with the franchise outside of the movies. But if you talk to fans of the TV show, they are ropeable that anyone would choose to engage with, like, such a precious thing in this sort of willfully, like, not hateful, but you know, willfully ignorant way, where it's like you're picking up the worst of what was quite a seminal moment in television.
Is there like a group of people on the internet who hate you because of this?
No. I mean, there's one comment section on an old AV Club article where a lot of people don't like us, but otherwise, there's no like immediate pushback.
That's
against
good.
It. We tried. We didn't. We never got anyone who is really heavily involved in the films on, but like we've obsessed over background players. Patrick Schwarzenegger, Arnold's son, he's a featured extra as a frat boy in Grown Ups 2, and we found out like 30 episodes into it and became really like really enamored by him because he was his acting was quite insane in the movie, and we were like already obsessed with whoever this was, and then like that's Arnie's son, and then I started looking him up, and he'd like it was just at the start of Blaze Pizza. I don't know if you guys know it's in New York, but he was like on the ground floor of, you know, like putting money into and like developing Blaze Pizza.
Okay.
And so we started pretending the podcast was sponsored by Blaze Pizza. We had a segment called Patty Schwartz Party Time. We've got at the end of the first season, we both got Patrick Schwarzenegger's face tattooed on our body. And like now, by some virtue, just constantly haranguing him on Twitter. Like we follow each other on Twitter, and every time I'm in LA, I'm always DMing Patty, being like, "We got to get a beer." And like every time, he always hits me back when I'm on my way to the airport, being like, "Oh, I just got this. I'm out of town." I mean, I don't think he actually wants to do it.
Sure,
but
I don't blame him. But it is a beauty of the internet right now, where if you just bother someone enough, and whatever you're doing gets enough attention, they're gonna talk to you or they're gonna notice you.
Yeah, it's a thing where you could tweet at someone a million times, but if you are like a person with enough followers or you have a verified account, it's the thing where it's like those kind of – like because if you are verified on Twitter, not like you personally but anyone, you can have it where you only get mentions from other people that are verified.
Yeah.
So you could just be like, oh, well, I don't even see this other stuff.
Yeah.
The dregs of society. Of course, the unverified.
One of the other ways that Twitter is so much better than the real world.
Mm. Yeah, you can only see the cream of the crop.
How about this? Let's end. First. Wait,
actually, I was just going to say one thing. Please. Since you are now living a resident of New York City.
Congratulations, yeah, my
thank
lady.
You.
I would say, because you should, if you want to get someone closer to the franchises in on your podcast, what I would suggest is hanging out in the West Village of Manhattan, because I have seen Mr. Big from Sex and the City in there multiple times.
That's good to know.
He's always around, like, McDougal Street,
that's
like
so
that area. I've
is
seen
it hoping
him.
To be recognized?
No. It was just a thing where it was like I was doing a show at the Lantern a couple years ago, and I was just standing outside, and if the Village Lantern is a place to do comedy in Manhattan, whatever. But a lot of people that go there are barked in. So there's people like outside barking people into the show, and someone tried to bark him in because they didn't realize who he was. And that was one of the funniest things in the world to me, to just watch someone go up to Mr. Big and be like, hey, we got a comedy show downstairs. And he just looks at him and just like, no, like very nods very softly to be like, no. And he's like with a beautiful woman, like probably leaving a restaurant, or like, there's the, what's right over there, the Blue Note or something.
He's probably grateful to be, you know, recognized as just another, man, you know, schmuck walking down the street. Like, hey, come watch this comedy show. And he's like, oh my God, I'm one of the people.
This is nice. You should do Sikowski's, Melissa Sikowski's a comedian friend, and she does a Sex and City tour.
I've done.
You've done it?
Yeah, we did the end of season two. We did a live show at the Bell House.
Okay.
And as part of it, we went on the Sex and the City tour. Oh, but it was like largely wasted on us because neither of us had seen the first movie or the franchise. And, you know, there's only so many moments of Sex and the City 2 that have made it into that tour.
Yeah.
But we had a cupcake at one of the bakeries. We had Cosmos at, like, Steve's Bar or whatever the hell.
That's great.
That sounds unbelievable.
Give everyone your social media stuff. Like, just give, let everyone know where they can find you.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're going to, I say, I'm just about pouncing onto you now. If you're going to do another season, we're going to suggest a couple movies. And you tell us yes or no if you would do a season.
Okay.
Okay, so go ahead.
Oh, we have to think of movies right now?
So, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at guy_Mont, M-O-N-T. And that is, honestly, only the best of content in both those channels.
Wow.
Really, really high quality stuff. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go real quick. I'm going to just give a couple. First, Goon.
Oh, that's the hockey movie.
The hockey movie.
No, I wouldn't do Goon.
Okay, Mike.
What about Mean Girls 2?
Yeah, I would probably be interested in doing Mean Girls 2.
Yeah, pretty good.
I don't even know what the premise of that one is.
I think it's like
same high school, different generation?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think only Tim Meadows is back.
Okay.
He's,
he's
comes
the only
back.
Recurring cast member.
Apocalypse Now.
I don't know enough about the movie, but I'm going to say, yeah, sure, why not?
Cool. Mike, one more.
Okay. I'm trying to think of like one that I feel like would really fit the tone of the movies that you have done.
I went the opposite direction.
Yeah. You want Apocalypse Now. Across the board.
Great film.
Loved by all. Especially the people of the country of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, what about The Animal, starring Rob Schneider?
Yeah, I would do that. I watched that earnestly as a boy.
Yeah.
And Rob Schneider, we, funnily enough, did a mini season of like a podcast called Overlooked and Undercooked. I don't know if you know this, but Rob Schneider wrote, produced, directed, and starred in a semi-autobiographical sitcom called Real Rob.
Oh, I've seen it.
You watched all of it?
I think I watched all of season
he
one.
He funded it himself and then like presumably made some of the money back by selling it to Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
But that is one of the worst, like, I remember thinking he was so funny, you know, because your first introduction to him is like, you can do it, cut this fucking head off, you know, and you're like, this guy's hilarious.
And then
that show's nuts. But I would do The Animal if only because I'm very curious about Rob Schneider as a person.
Yeah. Real Rob felt like he was just doing Louis.
Yeah, but
like ugh.
He took elements, like, there was no consistent storyline, but he took elements from so many different shows. He had, like, talking head interviews like the Kardashians.
Yeah.
He had, like, stand-up, which was so obviously shot on a soundstage.
Mm-hmm.
And all this stuff, none of it fit together.
Brutal.
It was so, so bad.
So bad.
Have you ever watched any part or all of his Netflix stand-up special?
No.
Let's watch it together.
Have you watched any of it?
Yeah.
It's called Soy Sauce. and the Holocaust because he's half Japanese and half Jewish?
I don't think he's half Japanese.
Oh.
He just brings it up a little bit.
He's got to be part Japanese.
I don't think he is.
Then it definitely shouldn't be called that.
I agree. Follow me at This Diego Lopez. Follow Mike at Mike Abruzzi, Brain Machine Network on all platforms, brainmachinenetwork.com, at A Little Time Pod, at A Little Time Pod on Gmail, at Gmail and on Instagram and Twitter. We will see you next week.
Next week is our 50th episode. That's pretty
fun,
huh?
The podcast.
That's pretty great. Nice.
Wow.
Next week is episode 50 with our first ever returning guest.
Who's it gonna be?
It's me, everyone. I'm
it's
the
guy. He's back again.
Actually,
but
really good
bit. Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
We love you.
Or good morning.
Welcome to BrainMachineNetwork.com.